The opinions of Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman don't reflect the views of Gal Media. Parental discretion is advised. KFNC Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gal Media station. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Today's Blitz Rewind starts now.
You see, Michael Jordan has some concerns about this 30 for 30 that's coming out, or documentary. It's not a 30 for 30.
I didn't know that he was concerned about it. I know it's coming out. I figured he'd be excited. What's he worried about?
He says it's going to make him look like a horrible guy.
Oh, huh. Imagine that. You know, I think Hitler had concerns about Schindler's List for some reason. Michael Jordan, I know people don't want to hear this. Michael Jordan, I don't think he was the nicest guy in the world.
So, we didn't get to your guy Bill O'Brien in the first hour because we wanted to give this some time. Because
and somebody did ask, how is your offense better without DeAndre?
Oh, okay, yeah, I must have missed that one.
Well, it's so damn long, you got to scroll down. The reason you missed it is because it's one sentence. I have no comment on that.
I knew that's what he would say.
I don't know what to think of this guy. I mean, he basically says whatever, you know, what we suspect he's going to wind up saying. But it's just, it's also patently arrogant.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on the Blitz, hour number three, 713-780, ESPN's your number, 713-780-3776, or you can get us on Twitter at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R, at AJ is the real, at the producer Nick, at Degenerates 975. You can text the show, you know the number for that. And if you missed the first 2 hours, that's some of what you missed, including AJ comparing Michael Jordan to Adolf Hitler. I thought that was pretty good. And, you know, a little misleading there on the rewind, because the question I was referring to wasn't the DeAndre Hopkins question. It was a question about when he was asked, did he need to compare him to Aaron Hernandez? And that was the one-word sentence answer, which was, I have no comment. But yeah, otherwise, that's pretty much where we were for the entire first 2 hours. And all available on podcastarena.com. You can go check it out there. And at least the second hour will be shortly, and hope everybody is making the most out of the situation right now. And we also had Joey Chestnut talk a little food for the food challenge that starts tomorrow. And we'll have Taylor McCarg on here in next segment, talk a little football. Okay, I wanted to throw some numbers at you, and I want you to tell me, good season or not.
Okay.
60.8% completion percentage. 4,057 yards, 24 touchdowns, 8 interceptions.
I mean, it's good. It's not bad.
Yeah, you know who that quarterback was?
Who's that?
Sir Thomas Brady.
Okay.
Well, so, there you go. I mean, that's the thing. If you just take numbers and look at them on the surface, I mean, guys can complete a high percentage of passes, throwing 3-yard passes.
Right.
And checking down and never going downfield.
But when you watch Tom Brady with the eye test this year, did you feel like he was doing anything that was really going to get the job done? No.
No, and think about the stats he put up in garbage time, like against the Texans, for instance.
Yep.
He had a bunch of garbage time stats. So, you know, I mean, I don't think he had
a great season. Dak threw for a lot of yards this year. But you know what?
Yeah.
Here were the top 5 players in passing yards this year. Number 1, Jameis Winston. Number 2, Dak Prescott. Number 3, Jared Goff. Number 4, Philip Rivers. Number 5, Matt Ryan. I mean, do we think any of those 5 guys had, like, a great season last year? Were any of them in the conversation for MVP? I don't recall it.
Yeah, I must have missed that.
Yeah, I mean it's a misleading stat.
Well, and you know that's the thing. In Winston's case, it's real easy to look at the 30 interceptions.
right,
and say, whoops. But, you know, in Dak's case, their offense was near the top all year.
Dak's surrounded by great players. Let's be real. Like, and I'm not saying Dak's not good. I do think Dak is good. I just don't think Dak is the same kind of good that, you know, Patrick Mahomes is or Russell Wilson is. I don't think he's that kind of good, and I don't want to pay him like that.
Oh, I think he's in the Kirk Cousins range, and to me, that's it. Because
and those guys can make a lot of money. Matt Stafford's in that same. I think Matt Stafford's in that same range. I think Carson Wentz is in that same range, and you can say, well, these guys got that money. But I think the thing you got to be careful about is you have to look at what these teams turn into when they give guys that money. And if they could do it all over again, like the Rams, like I was saying, would the Rams, if they could do it all over again, would they have paid Jared Goff what they did? And would the Rams have paid Todd Gurley what they did? Because you can, it's easy to say, well, the standard's been set with this contract. Well, was it a good contract? Because if the standard's set there and it ends up being bad, you probably need to pull the standard back some. It's almost the way baseball's done. You know, like when Dallas Keuchel couldn't believe that he wasn't getting the same money Clayton Kershaw was getting because it was his turn. It's like, dude, you're not that guy. You're a good pitcher, but you're not getting that kind of money. You shouldn't get that kind of money. And he's like, well, the precedent's been set. And Major League Baseball, the owners were like, yeah, we got to change that. We got to dial back that precedent because it doesn't make sense. And it doesn't make sense to pay Dak Prescott like he's one of the three or four best quarterbacks in the league, because the reality is Dak Prescott's not one of the three or four best quarterbacks in the league. And if they pay him like that, the long-term outlook for the Dallas Cowboys is very, very bleak.
Well, when you look at the guys who are the highest based on average salary per year, we know Mahomes is going to wind up breaking the bank, and he should. I mean, he's earned that. He's a Super Bowl MVP. He's a regular season MVP. And he's proven to be one of the big reasons why that team's good. So he's going to get paid. But Russell Wilson at $35 million. I mean, that's kind of your standard right now.
Yeah.
So how do you pay him what Russell Wilson's getting?
You can't. Ben Roethlisberger,
34. And see, now if I'm Dak's agent, I'm saying, well, look, Jared Goff's getting 33.5. I should get more than that.
Right.
And Aaron Rodgers is getting 33.5. So you're going to pay him more than Aaron Rodgers? I think.
Could you do that?
I wouldn't. To me, he should be in that range where between Kirk Cousins at 28 and Carson Wentz at 32.
Asking for a friend says, I feel Dak is maybe an uptick or about equal to Jimmy G and should be paid about that with inflation. 30 mil is the proper number. The thing that could argue that is Jimmy Garoppolo just went to a Super Bowl. Like, and almost all the guys you'll name that are making that big-time money have led their teams to a Super Bowl.
The only one who hasn't is Kirk Cousins. So
okay.
Wilson, Big Ben, Rodgers, Goff, Carson Wentz, even though it was Nick Foles, but I mean, that team was good because of him that year.
But let's
Matt Ryan is six.
Let me ask this question then, Fred. Do you think Kirk Cousins is on a fair contract for what he gives you?
Probably. I mean, I think that's about the right number for, considering he was a free agent on the open market, you're going to make a little more.
I guess. I mean, do you think that the Vikings are totally happy with him?
No.
Do you think the Vikings are going to a Super Bowl with him?
Well.
Because we always say, oh, it looks like this could be the year. I'm starting to think, man, maybe not.
Well,
maybe Kirk Cousins
off,
isn't that guy.
And they're peeling off pieces now, too. Which
yes.
Yep.
Because they paid Kirk Cousins. That's what's going to happen with Dak. The Cowboys aren't going to start getting better players around Dak once you pay him that money. That's not the way it works.
And I would just say maybe we shouldn't be adjusting for inflation right now because things are deflating.
Right.
I mean, that's the other part of it. But, the other guys on this list, Brisket making $27.98 million. That's another guy. If I'm Dak's agent, I'm looking at that saying, I got to make more than this guy.
And he should make more than that guy.
Yeah, and Garoppolo, same thing. I mean, I think he's a better player than Garoppolo. But Matthew Stafford at $27 million. So, to me, the real range should be, I think $30 million is high. But, I mean, it might be fair, considering that some of these other guys are going to move the bar up a little more. But, boy, I ain't paying him $35 million.
There's no way. There's no way. Because anybody making $35 million has earned it, and Dak just hasn't. Dak's been good. He's not there.
So we said all those guys were on bad teams. Quarterbacks don't play defense. Yeah, but they throw interceptions. And you're going to tell me that Dallas's defense was bad last year?
Okay.
No, you know what was bad was them in the red zone. The fact they couldn't score points. They could go up and down the field. But, oh well.
And that's the other thing. You kind of have to decide if you are you're building an offense around Dak Prescott or you're building an offense around Zeke Elliott.
Well, if you're building it around Zeke, there's a lot of quarterbacks that you could win games with.
I think Dak Prescott's one of them, and that's what they've been doing. I think they could find another Dak and win just as much as they have been. I don't think Dak is irreplaceable. I think guys like Zeke Elliott, those guys don't grow on trees.
No, and the thing is, how long are you going to be able to win like that? Because how long do running backs hold up?
Right.
So.
That's a good question.
All right.
But you paid him. He's there for now.
Yeah. And so that's, you paid Amari Cooper. So, to me, I mean, I like the idea of a one-year deal on the franchise tag and say, okay, here's your new coach. Show me what you can do. And if you're that good, you get me to a Super Bowl, you even get me to an NFC Championship game, yeah, I'll pay you. But that's me. All right, quick break. Don't go anywhere. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
This is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5. This is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on the Blitz. And very excited about our next guest. He's a former Rice Owl quarterback, college football analyst. So you can follow him on Twitter at tmcharg16, M-C-H-A-R-G-U-E. Taylor McCarg joins us. Taylor, how's it going, man?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad. Where do you rank amongst the all-time great Rice Owl quarterbacks?
Oh my goodness.
Give me the Mount Rushmore of Rice quarterbacks.
Yeah. So from a pro career standpoint, it'd be Tommy Kramer. He had probably the longest pro career with the Vikings, and then from the record books, Chase Clement. You know, through that 08 stretch, set all the records, had the 57, touchdown passes in one season in 08. And then I guess it would be me. In terms of all-time wins, I think I'm first. So that's really my only stat that I can hang my hat on, because Chase has everything else. He's got like 120 career touchdown passes, and I wasn't coming anywhere close to that. So,
I mean, wins is a pretty good one to have if you're just going to have one, right?
Yeah, not too bad. Got lucky when I timed up getting there when we had a lot of talent come in at the same time. So fortunate enough to be on a couple really good teams.
Were you what were you like as a prospect? Were you heavily recruited, and did you just decide on Rice, or was like Rice the only school offering you scholarships? What was your recruitment like?
No, I was sort of I was a late bloomer. I got most of my offers in October, November, and I was sort of the guy that when the bigger schools couldn't get their number one, a lot of them came back to me. So I was actually committed to Gene Chizik and Iowa State first, and then he left. And in that time, most of my offers had gone away. I actually ended up committing to Kevin Sumlin because that was my only sort of bigger offer left. So I was committed to Houston for a while. But they had like 8 scholarship quarterbacks. Case Keenum had 4 years of eligibility left. And Rice offered me 2 weeks before signing day. And I switched last minute and ended up really working out. But for a hot minute, I was committed to be a Houston Cougar.
Do you ever? I mean, obviously, when you go to Rice, I mean, there's not a long-standing tradition of winning at Rice football. Like, was that something that you took into account? Like, dude, if I win here, it's gonna take a special run.
Yeah, when we were going through recruiting, that 08 team had won 10 games. They won the Texas Bowl that year, played in Houston, big crowd, and so they had the wow factor that Rice, like you mentioned, typically doesn't have. And then we got in and just had a ton of seniors by the time, my fifth year, we had something like 22 or 23 seniors. And we went through a really bizarre stretch for Rice. We put 10 guys in the league over a three-year stretch, which had never happened before. And so I was just fortunate to be there when we just had a bunch of talent and won our conference my senior year, won 10 games, closest we ever, were to being nationally ranked. So it was a fun time to be there for sure.
Well, you're doing a lot of stuff with, and as a gambling degenerate, I spend a lot of time on ESPN Plus during both college football season, college basketball season, finding some games that you might not find on ABC or ESPN. But I've come across you a couple times. I mean, is this a career change for you? Are you going to be a full-time play-by-play or a color commentator now?
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to be full-time yet, but, who knows where it goes. I got a chance to jump into the booth for the first time last year and really enjoyed it. And like you said, I did mostly, really all of them were ESPN3, ESPN+, and really enjoyed it and hope to get, more games this fall, and we'll see what happens.
It's so funny because I think there's some people who love doing it, and then there's some people who think it's a great idea, and then they do it, and they're like, oh, my God, this is miserable. Like, my worst thing that I did in radio, one of the worst things I had to do in radio was I had to make some extra money, and I got offered money to do high school football play-by-play. And I remember being the most miserable because I didn't care about any of these players. It was very difficult for me to be invested in the game. You have to be careful what you say because they're kids, quote unquote kids. Yep. And that even goes up to the college level. Like, were you nervous that you weren't going to like it, or did you go in with a pretty positive attitude and find that it was a really good fit for you?
I went in with a positive attitude. And then when I got a chance to do it, it clicked really pretty quickly for me, almost immediately. I had a chance, an opportunity to coach when I got done, and turned that down. I didn't love the coaching lifestyle, but this was my way of getting back involved in the game, and I love it. I enjoyed the prep for it. It felt a lot like prepping for a game that you're playing, and I really enjoyed that piece, and I think that's a lot of what drives people away from it, is the homework behind it. I didn't realize, until I jumped into it, how much the guys that do it at the highest level, how much they prep going into these games, and that's why they're so good at it. But you're right. I've had opportunities to jump in and do stuff like, college volleyball, college basketball that I've turned down because I don't have any sort of passion for those sports. And like you said, if I did that, I'd just be trying to fool myself. But as it pertains to football, it's the only sport that I really have a passion for and still follow closely. And so it's been fun.
Obviously, we're coming up on the NFL draft. Did you run across any players this season that maybe you wrote their name down and you're like, dude, this is a guy who, if he's around on draft day, this is a guy I'd be interested to see what he could do at the next level. Have you found any guys like that, any hidden gems?
Yeah, there's a couple guys, the one in particular that I would highlight, and he was a freshman last year, so we won't see him in this year's draft, but Tyler Hudson out of Central Arkansas, it's a receiver for them. He had 12 touchdown catches as a freshman, and we got to see them play ESPN3. He was on Game of the Week for the Southland Conference towards the end of the year. And he's a big kid. He's like 6'3", and made plays all over the field. So Tyler Hudson in another two, maybe 3 years, depending on me. I think he really could be it's very rare, but the 1AA kid that can come out early. I mean, he had that kind of talent. He was phenomenal.
Do you still follow the NFL, or do you keep up with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was in Houston for the longest time, and so the Texans were the team. We had that was when Kubiak was there, and so I was, when I was really around all the time was when, Schaub, Andre Johnson, but then still follow the Texans closely. And Deshaun Watson was a guy that was, you know, followed really closely through college, and really think that he's one of the has a chance to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. It would be nice if his best pieces would stop being traded away, but yeah, still follow the game closely.
Does it feel, I mean, as someone who follows the Texans, does it feel like they're sort of wasting Deshaun Watson right now? Like, you've got a certain amount of time, especially on that first contract, you've got a certain amount of time with a guy. Does it feel like they're almost, you know, throwing that time away by doing these bonehead things?
If the DeAndre trade hadn't happened, I would say no. But, you know, coming out of the season, the loss to the Chiefs, I know they go up big, but most people didn't really give the Texans that much of a chance going into that playoff environment, and the Chiefs end up winning the Super Bowl. So just that in and of itself, I don't think anybody would have held that against Bill O'Brien. But the DeAndre trade made no sense. An all-pro pick is given away for an aging running back, and you have to take on the full value of their contract. It really is disheartening if you're a Texans fan. That I agree, it makes you wonder, are they squandering this opportunity with him? Because he's going to come up on the end of this rookie deal fairly soon, and then he's got the opportunity to say, you know what, I don't think we're going to win any, I don't think we're going to win championships here, at least with this regime. So I completely understand the frustration.
Are there any guys that you think that the Texans, I mean, obviously they don't have a first round pick, but are there any guys that you've looked at and said, you know what, this is a guy I'd like to see the Texans grab on draft day? Or even some position groups that you'd like to see the Texans helped out at?
Yeah, the knee-jerk reaction, and if you're a fan, the skill positions, you know, specifically wide receiver, are the one that LaVisca Chenault, receiver out of Colorado, if he's around still at that 40th pick for the Texans, I think that would make a lot of sense. He's a bigger target, and I think has the potential to be a big play receiver, and there's still a lot of value. If he's still there when the Texans are selecting, I think that could be really something that the Texans could be proud of that pick. The receiver position, though, to me is the one that jumped out, that the Texans got to replace some skill positions for Deshaun. Outside of that, another offensive lineman, I think if there's somebody hanging around in that fourth, fifth round that you can find some good value, they've got to figure out a way to get him protected a little bit better. And then the safety position, there's a guy, I was down at the Senior Bowl this year, Kyle Duggar, a small school guy out of Lenoir Rhyne. He made a ton of plays, was all over the field, and that's a guy that I sort of earmarked just while I was down there and thought, you know, when the time comes, if he's still around, he's going to be a second or third round pick. But that's another direction that if the Texans went there, I don't think anybody's going to scoff at that.
All right, that's Taylor McCarg. You'll see him. I guess you're planning on doing more football this year, right? More than you have been.
Yeah, it sounds like there's going to be, you know, whenever it happens, that's sort of what everybody's waiting on, whether it's a delayed start or a spring season. But looks like I'm going to have a chance to do some more of it, and we'll see what happens. But excited about, you know, getting back in the booth.
Well, maybe we'll bring you in after the draft and see what you think about the guys that they got. And maybe when things go back to normal, we can make this a regular thing, my man.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds good. I appreciate you guys having me on.
All right, appreciate it. That's Taylor McCarg of ESPN, ESPN Plus, ESPN3. Did a bunch of college football this year. Like I said, I saw him a bunch all over that thing. But, yeah, I think he's right. One of the greatest Rice football quarterbacks ever. I don't know how long the list
you know
is.
The only other guy I could think of that would be – in that group with Tommy Kramer and
Chase Clement,
Bert Emanuel, probably.
Okay,
the only other that I could think of off the top of my head.
He'd round out the Rice football quarterback Mount Rushmore, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
we haven't done enough Mount Rushmores during COVID, Fred. You know, we need to start doing
more. I think that might be our first, AJ.
I think it is. That's a key one.
All right, let's take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Years of research and innovation. Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Yeah, yeah.
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we're back on The Blitz, and I just went down the rabbit hole of Rice quarterbacks on the break. But I think our guy would be, if there were enough for a Rushmore, he would certainly be on it. So, career fourth all-time in passing yards at the school, third all-time in passing touchdowns, and as he mentioned, first in wins. I think that gets you there. But here's the top 10 passers by passing yards for their career at Rice. Chase Clement, Tommy Kramer, the other two guys, Randy Hurdle in the 70s and early 80s, Taylor, Dreyfus Jackson, 2012 to 2015. I barely even remember Dreyfus Jackson.
Oh, I
Mark
remember.
Mark Comalander
mm-hmm.
In the 80s. Nick Fanuzzi in the early 2010s. Donald Hollis might be the other guy. He was pretty good in the late 80s through 1990. Quintus Roper and Bruce Gadd in the 70s. That's your top 10.
Well, I think we picked the best four.
Yeah, well, and Bert Emanuel didn't have a lot of passing yards, but he was kind of a running guy, too. And he went on to be a pretty good receiver. So, yeah, all right. That, I just wanted to check to just see if we pulled that off right out of our asses or if there was actually some validity to it. And I think there's validity.
Yep.
So, can't tell you the last time I thought about Rice quarterbacks. So I did remember.
I think about them all the time, day
years.
And night.
Only when I'm betting on them, which, you know. But I haven't been able to get a grip on that team since Bailiff left because, you know, there was this one year where they were just a cover machine, and then the next year they couldn't cover, and it was like you had them figured out that they were just an ATM for the longest time, and now. Since they've changed coaches, it hasn't worked out for me, AJ. I don't know what
Sorry.
To say. Oh well. All right. Anything you need to get to here since this is our next to last segment?
Is it already?
Yeah. It's we're 4 minutes away from another break and then Hoffman on Hollywood.
Yeah, I've got my Hoffman on Hollywood stuff. I don't know if I really missed out on any really important stuff. As far as sports went, you know, I saw the. Did you read the story on Pro Football Focus today about the Texans?
Yeah, I did. I did.
I love the headline. What are the Houston Texans doing?
Like, yeah.
Well, that's a pretty good question.
I don't have an answer for that. Now, Bill O'Brien had a bunch of answers today. Not good ones.
Yeah, I was going to say, did he? Yeah, I don't know I don't know what's next for the Texans. I don't know. I assume, you know, a Tunsil deal gets done sooner rather than later. I don't understand. Do you have an understanding as to why it hasn't been done already?
No, I just think, you know, I from what I understand, they're constantly talking. It's going to get done. I think the guaranteed money is where they're apart right now, but I don't know that for sure. That's just what I've been told. Things are a lot tighter over there now that O'Brien's handling stuff. So.
And then I saw this, where would Jarrett Stidham rank in this year's NFL draft? And Daniel Jeremiah went on the radio in Boston. And Daniel Jeremiah said it's a tricky evaluation, Stidham was, because I had seen him throw live. I went and watched him as a counselor at the Elite 11 and saw him throw with all the top college kids. I thought he threw it better than all of them. I thought he had a tremendous ability, but he played in that goofy offense at Auburn, which didn't do him any favors. He was a tough evaluation, but talent-wise, he was impressive. I would say last year I had him probably in the third round range, and then this year I would say if you just go off talent, he'd be in the conversation as the fourth or fifth guy. And last year he was the seventh guy behind Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins, Drew Lock, Will Greer, and Ryan Finley. And then they asked him if you think the Patriots would take someone at 23 this year, and he said, no, I don't think so. Because if you're looking at it, Jordan Love is the only one of the big four, as we've kind of referred to them, for the draft process of potentially being there, and I don't think he's a great fit traditionally in what they've done. That offense, I know things are going to change now that Brady's gone, but I think that would be a little bit of a project. Tremendous upside, but I don't love the fit. If they wanted one, I think they would have to trade up and get one of the top three guys, and I don't really see them doing that in this draft. They've got 12 selections in the draft, though, over the seven rounds.
Yeah, although if Jordan Love were sitting there, it wouldn't shock me because I know he doesn't see him as a fit, but I think Belichick's pretty good at adjusting to what he has and getting things to fit around his players. So I don't quite get the fit thing. But
yeah, I mean, I guess it's when you think about what you've had with Brady, if you brought in a guy like, you know, Cam Newton tomorrow, you'd say, oh, this is an odd fit.
Yeah, but I bet you they'd run a completely different offense around it.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I think they're one of those teams that would actually adjust to the player as opposed to here run Bill O'Brien's offense or else. But, you know, Jared Stidham's interesting. And, I mean, it wasn't just, you know, you don't just have Auburn as his as a basis for him because he did play at Baylor for a year in a very different offense, and you know, now he didn't play a lot, but
right.
Threw over 100 passes, and you know, the Auburn offense is different, so I can't tell you what he is as a passer, but he was pretty good at Baylor in 2015. I mean, so, and obviously guys develop, but
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think he obviously, maybe he works out being the guy. I mean, if maybe Belichick is really the genius that we all think he is. And if so, well, okay. Not going to take a lot to win the East. You just got to beat the Bills, I think.
That's it.
All right. One last segment to go. Please don't go anywhere. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Is the Blitz.
Don't you get it?
On ESPN 97.5. This is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Fred Fowler and AJ Hoffman.
And we're back on the Blitz. One final segment to go, and someone was giving me grief for not including the option quarterbacks at Rice. It's like, those don't count. Those are running backs that occasionally threw the ball. Get out of here. All right, let's do a little hopping on Hollywood.
Let's start with some sad news, Fred. Some damn sad news. Brian Dennehy, dead at 81.
Oh.
Yeah, of natural causes, not COVID-related. So, I mean, I guess that's a good thing. But Brian Dennehy, who was he was in Kojak, MASH, Lou Grant, Dallas, Dynasty, Tommy Boy. He played the sheriff in Rambo, First Blood.
Silverado.
Yeah, many, many FX. Movies.
Yeah.
But he was Big Tom Callahan in Tommy Boy. Which I think was, and also appeared on The Blacklist. I think Tommy Boy may be one of his more recognizable roles because it was such a big movie. And he had a big character. He was Chris Farley's dad. But yeah, died at 81 years old today.
You know, for as fat as he got at the end, that's probably a good run.
Not bad, I would say. And I mean, with everything going on in the world, it's like, you know, I mean, you make it to 81 now, seems like that's pretty good, right?
I think most of us would take 81 right now.
I think so. I think if you, if someone came to you and said, listen, I can guarantee you 81, more like, or just take your chances, I think more would say yes than no, certainly.
I certainly would.
Oh, I know you would. Machete, doing good things, dishing out hundreds of free meals. Danny Trejo, who the star of I don't know how many movies. I mean, he's one of the great character actors. But he's got a famous Mexican food joint in L.A., and he's using his food for good. He's serving it up to feed L.A.'s frontline workers. He hit up Verdugo Hills Hospital in L.A., just before lunchtime, serve hundreds of free meals to hospital workers battling COVID-19 patients. He owns Trejo's Tacos, a popular joint with several locations across L.A. And this is not the first time he's done it. He's been doing it, I guess, since this thing started. He kicked off the week serving up hundreds of bowls for doctors, nurses, administrators, custodians at Cedars-Sinai in L.A. But he's basically been every day just been giving food to frontline medical workers. So kudos to Danny Trejo doing a great thing.
Also one of the most recognizable actors out there. And he's a very interesting story, too. So,
oh, yeah. Like, was like legit in prison.
Yeah.
Hugh Jackman. This is an interesting story. Hugh Jackman, he earned his first Oscar nomination in Les Mis, and might have reunited with the director for Cats had it not been for scheduling issues. Now, Cats has not been received as well as Les Mis. Basically, everyone said it's the worst thing in the world. It's bombed at the box office. It's got the worst film reviews of last year. And he was going to do it. Hugh Jackman was going to do it. And he says, I'm in the theater, man, and I don't want to be in the business of bashing people or jumping on bandwagons. I haven't seen it, and Tom Hooper's one of the great filmmakers we have. One thing he was more comfortable talking about was his legacy as Wolverine. And he said he has made peace with saying goodbye to Wolverine. He will not return as the character. Marvel Studios, however, is planning on rebooting Wolverine now that Disney owns Fox. And Jackman said it would be impossible not to do just that. He turned Wolverine into such a big hit, so he's come to peace with the fact that they're going to redo Wolverine without him. Which, I don't know if it's a great idea to redo it, but obviously Disney's going to try to get their fingers in that pie. So it makes some sense.
Yeah, and he's probably getting a little old to be Wolverine.
Agreed. Agreed. And there's also, speaking of Cats, there's like someone says the worst job in entertainment ever. On the Cats Blu-ray, the descriptive video service track, where someone is given the task of verbally explaining what is happening on screen in Cats real time. And it's got like giant cats watching little people march. And, like, they're dancing while the people are more... I mean, it's the most ridiculous-looking thing ever. So it's funny to think about, like, the jobs that, like, of the people who have to explain what's happening on screen. Not something I think about very often, but it's got to be a difficult job at some times.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine.
And then Stephen King doing something kind of cool. On April 17th, 1 o'clock on YouTube... is going to read from his latest release, If It Bleeds. And you're seeing a lot more of this, a lot of authors having like either Q&As or just reading their books live online, which I think is kind of cool. But Stephen King going to be doing it on April 17th at 1 o'clock on YouTube. So if you're a fan of him, I mean, I think it'd be pretty cool to hear Stephen King read one of his own books. Or at least,
yeah,
I don't know if I could sit there for the whole thing, but I'd dip in and hear a chapter or two. It'd be cool.
I'm a big Stephen King fan.
I am too. I haven't read him much lately, but when I was young, I used to love his stuff.
It's still good. It's not as good as, you know, his heyday.
Right.
But he's still putting out He's still putting out good stuff. So I read everything he releases.
And that is Huffing on Hollywood, Fred. Another Corona edition.
All right. We were pretty much Corona-free today.
Not a whole lot of Corona.
No. I mean, there's not really any new news other than Von Miller. But I don't know how you analyze, oh, Von Miller's got the Rona. You know? I think what'll be interesting, maybe people will feel differently about this whole thing if somebody young and in shape and famous dies from it.
Yeah.
Maybe then people look at it and say, maybe we need to be a little more careful. But I don't know at this point, just waiting for them to give us the green light on life again. So and, you guys doing trivia tonight?
That's the plan.
Yeah, I'm not sure what we're doing. I think, it's actually was kind of a normal day because the wife had to go to the office all day. So, you know, the only difference was I wasn't going in at 3 o'clock to go do the show. Just did it from here. But kind of felt semi-normal for once.
Yep.
So, and I guess that's all we can do. Nikki, how you holding up, buddy?
Can't complain, man. Just doing a lot of cooking and doing a lot of Netflix watching, you know, not much you can do, but I'm holding up, waiting for that green light like you are.
You gonna take a shot again at the tournament Saturday?
Yeah, I will. I'll play. Is it the same time? I believe it's, what is it, noon, 2 or 2:30?
Yeah, same time, 2 o'clock. We're asking everybody to be signed up by noon. And the one tweak we're going to make is it'll be 10-minute levels instead of 15. So that should move it a little faster, although if we get more players – it'll probably just balance that out. But, yeah, and I'll be tweeting out some more information about it tonight. But it'll be fun, and I'm 99% sure Norman Chad's playing again. He sent me a text earlier in the week to say, you know, check with him tomorrow. But we had some Poker Stars guys that were going to play, but Poker Stars nixed it because you can't play for money in this jurisdiction, apparently.
Oh, that's fair. So, yeah, I can't necessarily blame them. How'd you feel about how you played, Nick?
Just like I always do. I always feel really good and confident and cocky for like the first 20 minutes. And then I always end up losing whatever I won like 10 minutes after the fact. I believe you're on the table where you witnessed that.
I did. I can I give you a little bit of advice?
Absolutely.
Once you get, because you had built up a nice little stack at one point. You were one of the, it was early, but you were one of the early leaders. Once you get that, tighten your game up a little bit. Be a little more conservative. Play less hands. Put yourself at less risk.
You know what it is, AJ? It's when we go in Vegas, you can like shame me for my amateurness. You know what I mean? Like in person, in front of everybody. But online, you can't do that.
I could.
You can't do that. How?
There is a chat.
There's
function.
A chat box.
Yes, you can.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's true. Well, you can't do it to everybody because everybody's like pre-flop betting like crazy numbers online, and I don't see that when we go to Vegas.
See, I don't know about your table, but I mean, the ones I played at was almost the opposite. I think there was a lot better play in this than there was in those little tournaments in Vegas, at least in terms of people playing pretty smart.
But yeah, I'll take AJ. It's probably true because I was probably playing in almost every hand after I got
you
that
were.
Pot.
Yep.
Yeah, ideally, for your style of play, Nick, like 25 to 28% of the hands. And there's a little stats thing on PokerStars where you can check that. And if you get, especially if you get a big stack like that, just make sure you're not playing more than 1 out of 4. Just kind of try to limit yourself.
Noted.
So, all right. Well, I guess that about wraps up. I guess we got late hits coming up next. Is that correct?
That's
correct.
It.
All right. Well, Hoffman, great job today. Nick, always a pleasure. Fantastic work. I did okay. We continue to fly through the week. We'll be back again tomorrow. Till then, stay Rona-free, bitches.